Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to The Quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Thank you once again for listening, downloading, and hopefully sharing this podcast with a friend. This week, this episode, we talk 007. With the news over Labor Day weekend of Daniel Craig's mega offer to come back to the role, Brian and I decide, is that a good idea? And who would we pick to play Bond if the choice was up to us? Our top five will be something Bond related, shaken, not stirred by Brian. I have no idea what it's going to be. It'll be a surprise twist like many of the Bond movies have for all of us. But before we get to that, Brian, tell us where you are on the list and a movie or two that you have seen recently.
I just passed over the 7,100 mark. I am at 7,105. So a little less than 2,900 to go.
Do you feel good about that right now where you are?
I do. I do. Last I checked, it's like 2.74 a day. So I feel real good about it.
If football hasn't yet cut too much into your movie watching time, as we talked in our last episode, it could.
It could. I mean, it can. And right now, I've been watching some of the Emmy nominated programs, so that's cut into my time more. So than that, just trying to. You know, the Emmys are next week, and I'm trying to stay up to date so that I'm not woefully underprepared or whatever.
Well, take us up to date on a few movies you've seen that pushed you over that 7,100 mark.
A couple of recent releases. First, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is the second film in the Cloververse. their term, not mine.
Yeah, so I believe that's kind of a thing. But
and you know, the movie ends in a way where it's conceivable that they could turn the main protagonist of this film into a franchise heroine as she goes to, I think, Houston to fight off the alien menace.
My sense is, though, that you don't think that's a movie you really would be yearning to see.
Watch it. I mean, watch it, but No, Cloverfield was okay. It was really contrived because of it was maybe the best found footage movie. The best found footage movie was Blair Witch, and that's just because at the time it was new, it was imaginative. And then Paranormal Activity movies kind of stretched the boundaries of what was conceivable that you would have a camera filming and find it later. But so Cloverfield was okay. This movie eschews any found footage. It's a straightforward film. But I feel like we've seen this movie before, maybe a couple of times. You know, a girl is in a car accident, wakes up, she's chained to a bed with IV in her. And the guy who's chained her tells her that he saved her life from the alien menace, okay? So she just has to take his word for it, that there's something going on out there, and then there's this whole building dynamic, and then he turns out he was being honest to her, but he's lying about other things, and it's just, you know, it's snowballs from there.
Yeah, and the person who finds her, that's John Goodman, right? Who got some really good reviews for that role. How is he?
He's excellent. He is excellent. His character, though, is a little too on-the-nose schizophrenic. Like, he stops and turns on a dime. A little too, you know, it's like he goes from being sugary sweet to in your face screaming over nothing, which, you know, it may be believable, but it just didn't feel quite earned in this movie. Like, it didn't happen with any kind of rhyme or reason to it, and it was a little you know.
So this is somewhere kind of in the middle, the vast middle.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't hate it, but it's not something I would seek out again for any particular reason. But you know, if it was on, I might watch it.
Okay. Well, give us another film that you've seen, maybe
okay,
one that's either a little bit worse or a little bit better.
This movie was excellent, and surprisingly excellent. And I think it got kind of dumped at the wrong time of year, or it could have been maybe a little bit better. And it's another 2016 movie, and it's Race, about the story of Jesse Owens.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it was phenomenal. I mean, it really was. Jason Sudeikis was great in it. I'm unfamiliar with the guy who played Jesse Owens, but it was just, it was uplifting, it was powerful. It managed to take a story that I think most of us have a pretty firm grasp on what happened and illuminate parts to it that I just would not have, you know, did not know for whatever reason. And it was very good. And I, like I said, I think it should have come out in February. And not only that, I think it suffered because I think we have a cooked-in expectation for what Jason Sudeikis is capable of.
Yeah, who did he play in the film?
He played the track coach at Ohio State who coached Jesse, and he wanted to coach him in the Olympics, but for whatever reason, the Olympics, there was some politics involved, and he had to pay his own ticket, and he didn't get to coach him, but he was there. The movie also kind of exposed the not that we necessarily needed exposing, but the underbelly of how the International Olympic Committee operates.
Mm-hmm.
And how during the war, they turned a blind eye to the atrocities of Hitler to make a quick buck for themselves, more or less.
Yeah, there was a documentary on Netflix, something like Germany's Olympics or the Nazis Olympics. It was a documentary focusing on that and sort of hit some of those same themes and
well,
tones.
One particular guy, and I don't remember who played him. Oh, Jeremy Irons played him in the movie. Avery Brundage, I think, is his name. And he wasn't necessarily an evil guy, but he clearly did not care. But he couched it as, you know, the Olympics have to go on because these people want to compete and they have to compete. But he was, like, in cahoots with the Nazis to make some like contracts and bids that he was going to get as a result of making sure the games went on. So he steered the Americans into going because at the time, which I didn't know, we came this close to voting not to attend the 36 Olympics.
Yeah.
And he said, no, we got to go for this. And he, you know, couched it as if, you know, that's the spirit of what competition is all about. And not surprisingly, he wound up, he's the only American to have actually become head of the International Olympic Committee. And so, but it was, you know, it just made the whole process of it feel slimy. I mean, you know, it is just like the World Cup, you know, the bribing that goes on, you know, that's standard fare. And we know that because there's so much money at stake. You know that somebody's thinking, what's who's going to miss $5 million here, $6 million here, when we're talking about billions of dollars, which I get, but it doesn't mean that it's pleasant to look at.
Well, that's good. Well, from one tale of international intrigue to the international intrigue that's part of our big topic this week, a discussion about James Bond and who might be the next James Bond. Now, this discussion is inspired by a story that came out over Labor Day weekend by Radar Online, stating that Sony had made an offer to Daniel Craig, $150 million to reprise Bond for not one but two movies that would be filmed back to back, in the hopes that it would lure Craig from his very entrenched position that he'd rather basically cut himself with glass than play Bond again. So, Brian, did you see this original story when it broke? And if so, what was your thought about it?
Well, my thought is that it is an obviously very desperate studio that is reeling from their plans falling apart with Fantastic Four, with Ghostbusters, that is just desperate for relevance and need something that they can sort of put their flag on and use to kind of rally the troops and rally around and say, hey, look, we're still here. I know they have Spider-Man coming, but, you know, and while that's a partnership in theory, in practice, it's Marvel all the way, and they're just riding the coattails, and they're going to get paid, but they're not going to get any goodwill from that movie. That, you know, all the goodwill is going to go, see, Marvel turned this property around, and you couldn't do it, you know.
So yeah, it's not going to be Sony specific.
No, and in some ways, if the movie's really well, it only makes Sony look even worse.
Yeah. Well, I kind of thought the same, that was a lot to throw at, and it made me wonder,
it's a lot of money.
Do you think even Craig is worth it as a Bond? Even cost that money?
I mean, okay, the Bond movies, the Craig Bond movies, are really more about the aesthetic than they are about him, because he's not the most charismatic Bond to me. The first movie, and they still all feel sort of Jason Bourne derivative in their, you know, they've grown past that, but especially Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace were heavily influenced by the Bourne movies, and that sort of that dynamic, the cutting, the pacing, the just the visual look of it. And you know, these movies are more top end action movies than previous Bonds have been in the 60s and 70s. And maybe they're you know, and even the Brosnan movies had more kind of campy humor and tongue in cheek, and you know, these movies are
these movies feel a little bit more like the Timothy Dalton movies, except done better.
Done a lot better.
Yeah, I think Skyfall is the best, and I like Casino Royale a whole lot too. But I didn't see Spectre. Yes. Fell asleep during Quantum of Solace. So I kind of feel like he's, you know, at worst though, he's probably, I don't know, 2 of 4 in terms of making really enjoyable movies. At best, 3 of 4.
I love Skyfall. I thought it was one of the best Bonds. It was very well done, and it, you know, and I do like that in this iteration of Bond, that they seem to be building movies that care about what happened in previous movies. You know, so they're building more of a universe as opposed to these singular movies that take place at some point during this agent's, you know, adventures.
Yeah, it's more continuity conscious for sure.
Yeah.
About that.
And but now, you know, who knows if he's replaced, do they forego that continuity and especially
and that's the main question. That's the main question, if he's replaced, because this report came from Radar, but then a couple of days ago Vanity Fair published another piece quoting some sources, but saying really, as far as their sources knew, this offer from Sony, the story has a lot of holes in it.
Well, let's say this, if you are giving him by himself on his own $150 million, so let's say you're splitting it in two movies, that's $75 million a movie tied up in one person, okay? So your production costs are going to be $500 million to nearing $1 billion to make the movie.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're the director, you're going to be, you know, if he's getting $75 million, and say they get Sam Mendes back, say they want him back too, he's going to want at least 50, right? Mm-hmm. 25, I mean, so at some point, the movie's going to become totally unprofitable.
Right.
Just because I don't care what you have. You know, well,
and I think that's part of what the Vanity Fair piece was pointing towards, and particularly also pointing towards that Sony doesn't really even have as much decision-making power over Bond and who plays the next Bond.
Yeah, because it's all tied up. And it's
Eon, the original maker, and then MGM, who was the original distributor. They have more of a say than Sony does.
Copyright issues and how it's been sold to here, to here, to here, to here. And that's why they were able to do Never Say Never Again, and they were able to do that crappy Casino Royale movie. You know, who knows what's really going on.
And that was the other telling thing in the Vanity Fair piece. They also said, they quoted a source as saying that Craig's mentions in an interview about how he really didn't want to play Bond anymore.
No.
Infuriated the people at Eon, MGM.
They need to sign off on
called and basically just kind of said, you know, were incredibly frustrated with him and that sort of thing. And well, it feels like there's been it feels like Craig, you know, just as an actor, as the roles he's chosen, he really, I think, seems and has said on the record a number of times that I don't know necessarily he's outgrown it, but that it's just not a role that he really has much interest going back.
And he has never been interested in selling the movie. You know, it didn't help that he gave that interview when he was supposedly on tour to do promotional work for the latest James Bond movie.
Spectre, yeah.
So that's sort of unfortunate timing on his part.
Yeah. Where we are now then with it probably is that, hey, maybe somebody Sony-wise leaked this money. Maybe it's like you said, it's in some ways a sign of desperation. But Sony also saying, hey, look, we're trying. And then Daniel Craig turned it down. He's the fall guy, so now we have to go find somebody else. It's fascinating to me. I'm not a huge Bond fan, but obviously there's all these betting sites about who could be the next Bond. For the longest time, I want to say it was Tom Hiddleston that was leading it. But there's been some other fascinating names to me. Idris Elba being among them. Michael Fassbender, Kristen Stewart, and Gillian Jacobs. Who do you think would be good Bond?
If you go the outrage, you know, not outrageous, but the really, you know, anti-establishment choice and go Idris Elba or a female Bond, the chance of there being any continuity is gone.
Right.
Okay? And the problem with a female Bond is not necessarily the any sort of problem with her being able to handle the action or be in a position of power. Just if you wrote Bond the character as it is now, with a woman, you would find that people would slut shame that character pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, because that behavior, we're not at a point where the double standards are going to be exposed, and it's only considering the kerfuffle they had over the all-female Ghostbuster cast last summer, because they want to wade into those waters.
Well,
once again.
Well, it would expose what my biggest problem with the James Bond franchise is the misogynistic undertones. A lot of it, which actually I think Craig mitigated to some degree. They gave more of a background. They made some of that not nearly the focus as it was, particularly for Brosnan movies, for Roger Moore's movies. But I got to tell you, I've thought about this a little bit. And I think if I was going to pick out of kind of the betting favorites for a new Bond, I think Fassbender would be my choice.
I like Michael Fassbender and I like Tom Hardy. My question for them is, are either one of them, they're going to be frustrated with the role, okay? I can tell you that now. That the money, they'll like the money. But I'm not sure that they want the pressure and the fame and the life that comes with being James Bond. And I don't think Craig is happy with it. You know, I think he likes the money, but I think he feels like it's taken his career in a direction that he has no control over.
Well, I think probably, though, the next Bond, I would assume, would take a lesson from Craig's frustration and perhaps even build within a contract maybe more flexibility to be able to do some roles and do those sorts of things.
You may not be typecast, but you are going to be, you know, always James Bond everywhere you go, you know, and because this is not just a United States, this is a worldwide character showing cinemas throughout the world, and neither one of those, Fassbender has been Magneto. He has still managed to maintain a level of anonymity that is really kind of surprising. I don't see him get a lot of interviews. I don't see him, you know, schlepping on the tour circuit to promote his films. And I just don't know that you're going to – there's a lot of pressure with being the face.
That's true. So then who would be your pick?
I had kind of gotten comfortable with the idea of Tom Hiddleston, although I don't really know that he's physically – you know, he doesn't have the physical presence to pull off the role that maybe even Pierce did. You know, he seems like kind of a weenie guy you can push around, you know, and I just don't know that – I don't know. So we'll see. I mean, he's much better as Loki because Loki, you know, is immortal and can't be harmed anyhow. So, yeah.
Well, I think both Fassbender and Hiddleston would have kind of this more of a charm factor than Craig
did. Now, Tom
did.
Hiddleston would definitely be able to play a little bit of
either one of them or Elba. I think probably likely it's going to be someone who's more of an unknown. But listeners, tell us, who do you think should be the next James Bond? Talk to us on Twitter at 10kmovies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, and let us know what you think. Well, the world of James Bond is wide open, just as wide open as the possible casting of who will play James Bond next. And also wide open is this week's top five. There's so many different ways this could go, from top five roles that the James Bond actors have had over the years to best Bond movies, worst Bond movies, best Bond villains, best Bond female leads. So, Brian, tell us, which top five are you going to go with?
We're not going to go too out of left field. One thing that when you said, asked me, you know, what do we want to talk about for top five? I could tell you my top five favorite Bond movies, but I feel like that would be sort of perfunctory, really. So I'm going to go with the worst five Bond movies with a specificity that I can't name more than one for each actor.
Okay. All right.
Because I don't want it to be all, you know, Timothy Dalton. I don't want it to be
right.
I don't want him to dominate.
So there's been about six Bond actors. So relatively speaking, each one is going to have one movie on this list. And then
yes.
You're going to rank okay, I gotcha.
And I'll rank them with I'll tell you which one is the absolute worst.
Okay.
First, okay. So I mean, let's look through here and let's you know, some of the Bond movies are just they're not good. Some of them are okay. Okay, now here is in reverse order. So I'm gonna start with the best worst Bond movie, Pierce Brosnan in Die Another Day.
That's the one we saw, right? With Halle Berry.
That's the one.
Yeah, that one's bad.
It's bad. She was, you know, that was when Halle Berry was everywhere, and she was insanely popular. And the one thing that I will never forget about the movie, no matter what else, is the car driving through the middle of this ice fortress, like the Fortress of Solitude for some unknown reason. And then the car kind of like is invisible, but it just felt like they had like 1,000 different cool ideas, and they kept saying, let's throw that in there too, and that in there too. And nobody said, wait a minute. You know, they needed a little bit more restraint. The next best worst Bond movie is Daniel Craig in Quantum of Solace. This is the one you said you fell asleep.
Oh, God, it was so bad. It was just painful to watch.
I can't really remember a lot about it.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's the most unforgivable thing with a Bond movie. It was boring.
It was boring. I mean, I love Judi Dench. She's fantastic. It's odd that they turned it around, which next one was what I consider to be the best.
What about your third best worst Bond?
Okay, my third best worst. This is the worst one starring Sean Connery. And it is, it's not officially a Bond movie. It's Never Say Never Again. And he should have said never.
But that's one I'm not familiar with. So tell us a little bit about why it is so not
Bond. And it exists in that way, in the same way that, you know, we were talking about earlier, in that kind of like nebulous area where the copyright may or may not apply, and it kind of fell through. And so this Bond story is somehow not applicable. So Sean Connery, this was after he turned over the reins to Roger Moore, and he had, you know, even the title is something about, you know, making fun of him for saying he would never play Bond again. So he's come back, and he's playing Bond primarily because it appears that he was jealous that Roger Moore is now James Bond. So he wants to come back, and it actually came out the same year as another Roger Moore movie. So it's two Bonds competing, and the press had a field day with like Bond versus Bond, you know, and all this stuff. But it was just he was, you know, having stepped away from the role for a while. He was a little too old. He had lost a bit a step. It just wasn't his style didn't fit well with the style the movies were going in. Just so many different, you know, it's kind of like Joe Namath with the Rams. Where you're like, your knees are saying no, buddy. Your knees are saying no. Bond, for whatever reason, the character is frozen in a certain time and is not going to get out of that time, regardless of whether or not that time is espionage in the 21st century or the mid-20th century. It's still going to be the same character. And you just need a certain charisma and a certain thing to play it. I just don't know the Sean Connery. But yeah, that's okay. Now let's move on. The next is my least favorite. Well, not my least favorite Bond. That we talked about that. That's Timothy Dalton. But the next one is Roger Moore, and it is View to a Kill.
And where was this in Roger Moore's career? Was it near the time when he should have stopped playing Bond, or more towards the middle beginning?
Probably. I mean, it's 85, and it's full of the excesses of, you know, everything. And 80s Bond was just like really cheesy slapstick with him jumping from one bed to another, to another, to another. You know, and as much sex as occurs in the James Bond movies, it's really shocking that they never tried to, like, make the sex scenes more explicit in any way, you know, because clearly that's a big part of their selling point. And they you know, even now, you know, it's kind of tame compared to what you expect in some other films. But clearly it's something they're going for. I mean, killer soundtrack, love Duran Duran, but...
Well, again, this is interesting to me that most of our picks have been films that are at the tail end of each of these Bond's careers, with the exception of Craig and potentially the exception of your number one.
Christopher Walken.
The worst Bond film.
Spoiler alert,
it better involve Timothy Dalton.
It does. One thing about Chris, Future Kill, real quick. The one good thing it has going for it is it has Christopher Walken as the Bond villain, which is, you know, at least humorous. But the worst Bond film is License to Kill, ironically enough.
Which is the first Bond film I think I watched from
start to finish. I'm gonna go ahead and say it's License to Kill. And you know, the late 80s movies with Timothy Dalton were just really bad movies. Those movies, I don't know, like what, two or three? Maybe there may have been four, but they almost killed the Bond franchise, to be honest with you. Pierce reinvigorated it, and Pierce should have been the Bond in the 80s. Right. He should have got the job when Dalton did, and we all know it's because he was stuck on Remington Steel. But it's just, I like Timothy Dalton, and he's been some things since then. I think he's a very fine actor. He's just not really well equipped to be a James Bond.
And the worst sin, I think, of that movie, License to Kill, was the fact that they killed Oscar
for no good reason, I mean, other than just,
and it felt like that was, they were trying to do things that would be a little more realistic. I think the villain in that was, you know, a South American drug dealer, international, you know, super terrorist spy.
And Benicio del Toro was in that movie, which is also sort of odd.
Whoa.
Thinking back on it now, yeah, you're like, really? What were you doing here? Like, like, how did that happen? And also, I'm looking at the cast list, and I don't remember his role in the movie, but I see that Wayne Newton is listed in the cast list for License to Kill.
Well, you can't have a bad movie probably without Wayne Newton. So, listeners, those are Brian's top five worst Bond movies. What are your bad Bond movies? What are your good Bond movies? Are we underselling Timothy Dalton just a little bit much, or are we still overselling him too much as a Bond?
That's great, the latter.
Let us know what you think, again, by seeing us on Twitter at 10kmovies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. We thank you so much again for joining this conversation, for listening, and for sharing in Brian's journey as he moves ever closer to 10,000 movies before he turns 40. We'll be back in 2 weeks, but until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus. Order line
11.